हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, page 36. Other emotions which are not so intense and are not classified as sattvas, if they are similarly eclipsed in favor of conscious actions, are called anubhavas, though the immediate cause is emotion. Anubhavas are classed as cheshta rupi because of preponderance of conscious action. Footnote 33. Though these other items are mentioned as preliminary angas of bhakti, cheshta rupa, the inclusion of service to things related to Krishna in anushilanam applies even at a more advanced stage. In bhava rupa bhakti, this subclass of cheshta rupa bhakti on the advanced level is called karya rupa, perfectional stage. And such actions are called anubhavas. This is explained in the commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 131. But so you have the similar thing happening at all the levels, right? Because if you're dealing with Krishna, everything being expanding from Krishna, it's going to have his nature. So you're going to be able to see these same elements all the way down, just that they take on a smaller forms or, you know, more specific just aspects that are there, while on the higher aspects, because it's about the mood of that attraction to Krishna, that's the prominent thing, then they do activities. But on this level, then it's about activities. Mm-hmm. Means, of course, there's a mood, but it's material. It's about how we'll enjoy, how we'll be happy. Mm-hmm. So we're not really worried about that aspect of rag. Right? Does that make sense? We don't use it as an example. But we do see that if you're dealing with the drama and things like that, then they'll take these things into consideration because the form is going to be the same. Does that make sense? It means the form of emotion that you find here is going to be the same as there. Just there it's about Krishna, here it's about ourselves. Right? So when it's about ourselves, that's considered the lower level. When it's about Krishna, that's the higher level. Right? So the whole point is this, unless we make that endeavor to switch it from one to the other, if it naturally switches, great. But if it doesn't, then one has to use sadhana. And in the sadhana, in the application of that, then we're going to have to use the intelligence, we'll have to make that application, we'll have to be conscious of whatever's there. Right? But it's a consciousness to switch from the material to the spiritual. While there, they may make a conscious aspect on that there's a mood there, there's a bhava, but they want to do a specific service for Krishna. Because that opportunity arises, you could do that. Mm-hmm. So then it will have that same kind of name. It'll be called a that aspect of cheshta rupa. Mm-hmm. But in there it'll be called karya rupa, because it's perfectional stage. Because mm-hmm. karya means to, cheshta means you try, karya means you do. Yes. Right? But it's the same principle, that you're conscious of something in a situation, so therefore you make that endeavor. Right? But it's, of course, started by the mood. Mm-hmm. Yes?
So, at cheshta rupa or at bhava rupa, there would be emotions. I mean, bhava rupa emotions are there, definitely. But
cheshta rupa doesn't necessarily mean emotions are there. It's not necessarily driven by that, but it can be. That's why in the definition it gives it so it can be utilized at any level. See, if we want to put everything in a box, we're going to be extremely disappointed. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say the mother is at home, she's cooking dinner. Okay? Are there any emotions involved? She's cooking for the family. What happens if, just before she started cooking, she got a call from a friend about somebody else who made some snide comments? She's still going to cook, but it's not about the family. She's cooking because she's doing it for the family. The emotions are different. So emotions are always there. You're a living entity. But the point is we have to be very, very careful. Just because there's emotion doesn't mean it's spiritual. And just because it's activity doesn't mean it's material. So, Krishna Anushilanam. With this consideration of Cheshtarupa and Bhavarupa Bhakti, Anushilanam means service for persons related to Krishna or service for Krishna directly. That is the meaning of Krishna Anushilanam. Right? Because when we talk about Krishna, as we saw before, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying in Sambandha, that it means Krishna and his devotees. Because otherwise, what's the point of Krishna and no devotees? We wouldn't be having in a relationship then. If there are no devotees, we wouldn't be manifest. We'd just be part of the the Tatastha Shakti, that's part of the Sarup Shakti, and that is non-different from him. Right? So that we're manifest means his internal potency is manifest, and he's interacting with his internal potency and the devotees in that platform. Mm-hmm. So, good. That is the meaning of Krishna Anushilanam. Because this definition also includes persons related to Krishna as well as Krishna himself, it avoids the fault of being too narrow. Thus, angas of bhakti, such as taking shelter of Guru's lotus feet, may be included in bhakti. Footnote 34. Other items would be associating... What happened to 33? Oh, I read 35. That's why it didn't quite make as much sense. Okay, sattvika bhavas, right? Because it says sattvas. So sattvika bhavas have a strong internal emotion component called sattva, which forcibly interacts with prana. Right? Anubhavas aren't necessarily interacting with prana. That's not how they're known. It's just an extension of the mind. While the sattvika bhavas, then they are, has the element of prana to it. So therefore it creates those physical symptoms. Right? Anubhava is creating mental symptoms. Those mental symptoms are expressed through, maybe expressed through activities. Right? But it's an expression of that mood. But the sattvika bhavas means that the emotional content being interacted with prana then affects the earth, water, fire, earth, water, five ether and prana? Probably fire, air. Yeah. In the body, which causes external symptoms in the body. Voice and mind. Because they are not conscious actions, though they involve action, they are distinct from anubhavas. Right? So they're not conscious, while the other, you're conscious of it. They just happen.
Can you please give the example of the
anubhava against sattvika bhava? Let's see. You'd have to have a list of the anubhavas to do it. The sattvika bhava is easy because it means like,
the hair standing on
the yes, that all that being stunned and things like that. Yeah. So it's all physical symptoms.
Yeah,
not that there aren't physical effects in the anubhavas, but they're an emotional and there's a consciousness of that. These others, they just happen. They're just different manifestations of emotion. Is that... doesn't make sense? Or?
No, I just don't understand exactly what's anubhavas. Sattvika, yes.
Sometimes sattvikas they call involuntarily emotions.
Okay.
Means they happen on their own without us being involved.
Yes.
And then anubhavas is that you're conscious about it, like see you see the deity, and then you're seeing, okay, one of the angas is dance before the deity, and then you want to dance, and then you dance. That's an anubhava. So you make an effort. It's a conscious endeavor.
So that's why it's connected with Cheshta.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the difference. The main difference. That's some subtle things.
Yeah, neither. Yeah, the whole thing is all subtle. Okay. Okay, other items would be associated with devotees, observing Ekadasi, Vrata, and living in the Tham. Hmm. So we get all three of them today. Okay. Even in Bhava Rupa Anushilanam. Okay, footnote 35. That's the one. Although these other things are mentioned, other items are mentioned as preliminary angas of bhakti, cheshta rupa, the inclusion of service to things related to Krishna and Anushilanam applies even at more advanced stage in Bhava Rupa Bhakti. This subclass of cheshta rupa bhakti on the advanced level is called kalya rupa, perfectional stage, and such actions are called anubhavas. Mm-hmm. Right, so you want to do something. Right? It doesn't have the intellectual aspect, but you're aware, like Prabhu was saying. You see the deity, you want to dance, so you dance. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is you're standing there, you see the deity, and the voice chokes up, and that you can't do anything about that. It's just it happens on its own. It's not that you're inspired to do. It just does. So it's just these different... Right? Mm-hmm. Then you have on top of that the sanctuaries, right? Means all these things are going on, we're experiencing them on the material platform. It's just that we never look at it as a science. But because there it's about rasa, then that's the main science. So then you have this whole book that explains the details of that. And this is just the opening pages. This service or anushilanam, obtainable only by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, is a transformation of the Lord's Sarup Shakti, and thus is not material but spiritual. Right? So that's why you can't do anything material to get bhakti, because it's a transformation of the internal potency. However, one should understand that though it is purely spiritual, it makes its appearance and is not created, since it is eternal, in the body, mind, and words by taking over the functions of the body, mind, and words. Right? Just like everything here is made out of the external energy, but Krishna's potency pervades it. So when bhakti pervades something, then it has this manifestation. So it may manifest in the body, in the mind, the words. Right? It's very important to appreciate that. You have Krishna's energy, but Krishna's not limited that he can't expand his energies, the superior energies, through these inferior. Yes. But it's as his will, not at ours. Yes. Right? And his will is follows bhakti. So if there's devotion, he does that. If not, it doesn't happen.
Yes. So, therefore, the material is able to accommodate the spiritual, we can say.
How the material can accommodate spiritual, yes. Because technically, there's no material. It's all Krishna's energy. It's just a matter of inferior and superior.
The body was in. Body was
yes. In. This will be clarified later on. Footnote 36. Anushilanam at the stage of bhava displays transformations of the Sarup Shakti. This is explained in Brahma, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 131. In this verse, the word Krishna also indicates bhakti or other forms of God, because Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, including all other forms of God, such as Nrisimha. Gradation of these forms will be considered later. So the first point is that it's all Krishna, and therefore, along with Krishna, it's all appreciated. Does that make sense? Because that's the first thing. If we try to, without the proper spiritual understanding, make these distinctions, then we will tend to do them on a material platform. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Maharaj, in the footnote it says 36. Anushilanam at the stage of bhava displays transformation of the Swarup Shakti, which means what? Which transformation?
You're dealing there with the spiritual form and all those aspects like that. And so you're dealing on that platform. There's transformations there. But it mentions that it can make its appearance within the body, mind, and words. Right? So it's talking about this. This will be clarified later on, because the spiritual potency is what's transforming, not the material energy. Right? Material energy is transforming how it transforms. But that how the internal potency is pervading through it. And you're getting these transcendental experiences because being absorbed in Krishna. Does that make any sense? So in other words, it's the spiritual potency that's transforming, not the material.
Can you say that when the Swarupa Shakti is being transformed, the effect of it are the different bhavas in that the devotee experiences?
Yes.
Okay.
Anukulyena. The word anukulyena, with favorableness or friendliness, is the descriptive element of anushilanam, or service. It is necessary in order to limit the definition of bhakti, right? Because otherwise you just say it's to please Krishna, but the point is that it has to be favorable. And that favorable means according to Krishna. Right? The definition of bhakti cannot be established with a disagreeable attitude towards Krishna, pratikul. The word anukulyena in conjunction with Krishnanushilanam means behavior pleasing for Krishna. Pratikul means the opposite, behavior disagreeable for Krishna. Because this word is in the instrumental case, anukulya becomes anukulyena. It indicates that favorableness is a necessary qualifier for defining anushilanam. Right? So if you're saying it's about Krishna, it has to be favorable. Right? Footnote 37. Itam bhuta lakshane. An attribute is put in the instrumental case to indicate a particular state of determined state determined by it. Panini 2.3.21. Not as a secondary element that can be assumed to exist in Anushilana and which need not be mentioned separately. Right? So it has to be mentioned because it's a qualifier. It's an instrument. So in other words, doing things to please Krishna, it has to be favorable. That's the instrument. If it's not favorable, it's not actually something for pleasing Krishna.
Maharaj, can we say that it can be the case that before becoming favorable, it is not favorable? For example, if we want to develop love of Krishna, in the beginning we are not, we are thinking we are God, so to transfer the consciousness means there is maybe a few steps. And one step can be, I accept Krishna, but I don't want to serve him.
Yes, yeah, it can. It can go through stages. But the point is these lower stages, that it's not until it becomes favorable at that point, that's when you call it bhakti.
Yes.
Before that, it's a jnata sukriti, or, you know, just anartas.
Yes, exactly.
Right, so that stage where you accept Krishna but don't want to serve him, we wouldn't call that bhakti. Means intellectually we've understood, we may have that faith. So, okay, that's the thing. But where's the endeavor? What's the effort?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we're talking about the aspect of cheshta. You're making an endeavor. Right? Because that was the whole point, what it said before, is that the devotional activity, I think it was the root then is that it's an action. Right, there's an action, there's a meditation, there's, you know, something that's there. So that all those things should be favorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maharaj, we can say that at that level of the start of material devotion is there is a need to be surrendered to Krishna.
Yes, but it starts with the devotees. It starts because we associate with devotees. And by that association, then we start to see the value of serving Krishna.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Then we take that up. So that's why then the process has those levels of, so you associate with devotees, and from that agyata sukriti, that develops then into shraddha. Then from that you take up properly the association.
Mm-hmm.
Then bhajana kriya.
Yes.
An objection may be raised, may be stated as follows. When someone says, prepare the weapon bearers, warriors, for battle, he means as well the warrior should also bring the weapons. Similarly, the word anushilanam, service to Krishna, is sufficient to define bhakti. Right? Because if you say bhakti, then it means all these things. Right? But then the problem is people will, so many things they'll just call devotion. Therefore. Okay. Since anukulya is implied by the word anushilanam, it is not necessary to mention it separately. Bhakti means actions directed to Krishna. It is a sufficient definition, right? So to keep it that wideness of that, then what does that mean? It can accommodate things that may not be bhakti, right? So Rupa Goswami wants to. It's wide enough that it gives the full range, but narrow enough that it's exact. The response is as follows. When someone says, feed the weapon bearers, he does not mean that the weapon should also be brought to the dinner table. Right? Just using their same thing back. That's why Jiva Goswami is the smartest, right? Thus, in all cases, the mention of weapon bearers does not imply that they bring their weapons, because they're saying that it automatically means that. They're looking at it from a sentimental point. Similarly, the word anushilana, if used alone, may not in all cases include favorableness, right? Actions directed to Krishna with concentration are not always favorable. Footnote 38. Kamsa meditating constantly on Krishna with an intention of killing him is thus rejected, though it is anushilanam of Krishna. Thus, the word anukulyena must accompany anushilam in the definition of bhakti. Right? Thus, the word anukulyena is necessarily added to this particular definition of bhakti. There may be another objection. We could say, perform favorable bhakti without even mention anushilanam. For the word bhakti alone implies service. For instance, when we say, the king goes out traveling, we also imply that he goes along with his retinue. Similarly, when we mention bhakti, it includes service and other items as well. That is true. However, by omitting the words anushilanam, there will be no clear indication of the different shades of meaning inherent in the word shil, active and non-active, and consequently no indication of the different modes of bhakti, cheshta rupa and bhava rupa, anushilanam. The word anushilanam is specifically supplied in the definition in order to comprehend the full sense of the root. Furthermore, in order to define bhakti completely, the prefix anu is added to shilanam, service, and to indicate that the service should be continuous. Anu, footnote 39. Anu means repeatedly as well as following after. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it must always be going on. Otherwise, you did something once, and like I heard many, many times. You know, on those long train rides between Calcutta and Delhi, right? Then about how this, you know, how you say, easily elderly gentleman is mentioning, yes, I read the full Bhagavad Gita when I was 12. Right? I don't know why it's always 12, but, right, isn't it? It's always 12, not 13, not 11.
And full.
Huh?
And full.
They maybe it's connected with the Upanayanam. They have to actually do something at that time. So I don't know. But it's always 12, and it's always the full Gita. And so because they read the full Gita when they were 12, now they are the pundits and everything. They have an opinion on everything, and it's all there. Yes. So that's why it says continuous. Otherwise, yeah, 12 years old, and the guy's 50. It was a few years ago. Maybe there needs to be some. Yeah. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam, continuous service or emotions directed towards Krishna, his expansion forms or others related to him, with a pleasing attitude towards Krishna, footnote is the essential characteristic, Sarup Lakshana of Bhakti, footnote 40. This phrase is sometimes ambiguous since it can mean having an attitude to please Krishna, or something which is pleasing to Krishna. Therefore, Vishwanath in his commentary says it must only mean having an attitude to please Krishna. Mm.
Right. So he just combines the two?
Because it may be something that's pleasing to Krishna, but you have to have the attitude that you want to please Krishna. Just like cooking is something that is a pleasing activity that can be done for Krishna. But just because you're doing it doesn't mean that it's pleasing to Krishna. Because Krishna's only interested in the bhakti. So when you use bhakti and apply that in the cooking, then it becomes useful.
Can we say that direct activities, they already imply that?
Direct activities imply?
that we do it for Krishna, for example, chanting, or why would you do it otherwise? You have a.
Why do you need tattoos, hairdo, huge beads to play mridanga for kirtan?
Secondary.
Yeah.
Anubhavas?
But maybe Anubhavas. That's a good explanation. Okay. We'll go with that. You understand is that there can be so many reasons why you're doing something. So we have to be aware that we're doing it to please Krishna. Otherwise, what happens is we take it that the bhakti automatically, it's all for Krishna and everything like that. We make no endeavor. We do the activity. We don't make endeavor to try to make the conscious. But now, when we do other activities, you know, there's seminars you can go to about how, you know, putting in the right attitude and all. It's all about the attitude and when you're dealing with others and this and that. And you understand? But somehow the bhakti is just automatic. So that's what Jiva Goswami is talking about in these responses before. Because people will say that. Because it's just automatic. It's bhakti, it just happens. But everything else, you have to put in the real endeavor, the intelligence, put in, you know, to really go for it. Then only it happens. And that's very clear. Everyone will say that's the way it goes. And if someone says, no, it'll just happen, they'll say he's, you know, an illusion. Right? So the point is why is that there, but it's not there in the original? Because if it was just happening, why are we here? Why aren't we there? Does that make sense? Yes.
It's kind of like a two-part question, if that's okay. As Sadhana does, many times we mention, or we may hear from others also, that one has a desire not only to do something that's not pleasing for Krishna, but specifically inimical desires towards Krishna. And so one part of my question is, what do we do with those desires?
Nothing.
Just nothing.
It means, why would you want to use those desires?
Well, sometimes they haunt devotees.
Yeah, you just ignore them.
Just ignore them. And then for desires that are not inimical to Krishna, but are just purely selfish in nature, same thing.
Then do them without selfishness. Because that's why the definition is here. Then you know what's bhakti. So it's the proper activity. It's your duty to do it without that selfishness. And things that are not useful for Krishna, just don't bother with them. You know, or find what is useful within them and then use that aspect for Krishna, to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's always trying to bring it back to this point of it's about Krishna. Okay. Anukulyena Krishna Shilam. Continuous service or emotions directed towards Krishna is expansion form or others related to him with a pleasing attitude towards Krishna is the essential characteristic, Sarup Lakshana of bhakti. Right? That's the main character. Then there'll be so many others, but this is the main. Here. Anyavilashita Shunyam. To define the concept of uttama, two modifying phrases are added as secondary characteristics, tatashta lakshana. Anyavilashita shunyam, it should be devoid of other desires. And jnana karmadhyanavritam, it should be not covered by jnana and karma or other items. The use of the word anya, other, in anyavilashita shunyam indicates that bhakti should have only one desire, to serve the Lord, since bhakti is not devoid of desire, and no other desire. So there shouldn't be any other desire but to please Krishna. But there is desire. This idea that spiritual means there's nothingness there. Jnana kamadhyanavritam. Jnana, knowledge, in the second phrase, refers to inquiry concerning the impersonal Brahman with no qualities. This should be rejected. But inquiring concerning the worshipable form of the Lord should not be rejected, for that knowledge is necessary to bhakti, right? So here you're making a distinction in jnana. So that which, the end of it, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning, where that, I think Srila Prabhupada is mentioning that. Both were mentioning. The application of the knowledge, if its end is in liberation or in personal Brahman, that's rejected. But if by that knowledge it's about Krishna, so that you appreciate more Krishna's position, our position, and you take up the service in bhakti, that's useful. Right? Because some people will take the position that it's knowledge, so we don't need it, because it's just all about bhav. Right? So this is the sahajya method. Right? The word karma in the verse refers to daily and periodic duties enjoined in the smritis, and not the actions of serving the Lord. Right? So, when we say karma, because it means action, we mean those things in the daily and periodic duties that the scriptures mention that are not in connection with Krishna. Not the activities we're performing to please Krishna. Right? Because then you'll have those as, oh, you don't need to do activities, it's just all above. Therefore, we don't need to, you know, how you say, use beads and chant and all that. It's all within the heart and, yeah, like that. So it's, you don't reject the ones that are recommended, the ones that are used for pleasing Krishna. Okay. The word karma in the verse refers to daily and periodic duties enjoined in the smritis and not the actions of serving the Lord. For serving the Lord is the very definition of anushilanam, or service. The word adi refers to such practices as renunciation, vairagya, yoga, and shankhya. These, as well as impersonal jnana and smriti actions, are obstructions to pure bhakti. So, when the renunciation, the yoga, the shankhya, all these things are not in connection with the Lord, then they're obstacles. Mm-hmm. If they're in connection with the Lord, it's what's recommended, then they're not. But you still are trying to do it with the purpose to please Krishna without the benefits you'll get from karma and jnana. Right? So, why these fine points on here? Because the tools you're using are the same. Right? Whether you're using them for material purposes or you're using them to please Krishna, the tools are the same. Right? Does that make sense? So what's recommended in the scriptures that you see in karma or jnana, the same tools are used within bhakti. Right? Karma is to perform an action that gets a result. Right? That can be engaged in the service of the senses. Right? And jnana is to detach oneself from the material world and establish yourself on the spiritual platform. Both of those are useful if they're connected to Krishna. But if they're not connected to the Krishna, the same activities become an obstacle. Right? So that's very important, because you could say, if one's coming from a background or lifestyle that all the activities you do, none of them are recommended. You know, they are all in that, you know, and so on. You know? That's it. Yeah. Should not be covered by karma, jnana, or other items. like it mentions about the 12, tribes or lower. Right, yeah. So, you know, we always feature, but, you know, kind of in that last little bit. Then, taking up devotional service, then you're engaged in activities that are from the scriptures that are recommended. So it seems like a very different. You know, so devotional service means it's a whole different set of activities from normal, quote-unquote, normal activities. But if you're from a Vedic background, right, then the activities you're doing and what devotees are the same. It's just that if one's not a devotee, they're generally being done for karma or jnana. Worship of demigods, fruit of work, you know, heavenly planets, material facility, all that. But it's the same activities. Like I remember in South when we went to Madras, then that would have been, 74. Then the earlier, you know, it means the earlier on in life membership making, You always you started at the top, right? It's a descending process, right? So the generally the most established business persons were the ones you're going to, right? So one of the problems in South always is that everything starts very early there. Right? And I think all the shops, everything are open at 8 in the morning. Now I don't can't say, but it was then. 8 in the morning, just like here at Calcutta at 11, then they're kind of open. They were actually open at 8. Like that. So when you went to people's houses, you went before that. But then when you went before that, they were doing their puja. And they'd be doing that for hours. So that means they were out before that, they took their bath, they did all this and that, then they do the pujas, and they, you know, so it was a... So the whole point is they were up when we were up. And these are just industrialists. Right? These aren't, you know, big Brahmins and this and that. These are just guys that, you know, big, you know, how you say, big fat cats. You know, they just make lots of money.
Maybe because of that? Maybe because of that?
It could be. I mean, one of them that we went to, half the vehicles in Mayapur are from that company.
I think all of them.
I mean, it's from South. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. So, and that was a problem. We went to see him and they told, oh, sorry, he's doing puja. So you have to sit there for an hour until he's finished with his puja. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that it has to be pointed out because the tools are the same. Right? It's just like, let's say we're cooking, you know, how you say, cooking on the sidewalk because it's so hot, or, you know, old tomato tin cans, you know, or stuff like that, you know, on a whatever it is we can make to work. But then the, how you say, I told you about the, what was it, pasta labusta? Never heard about pasta labusta? Ah. I came in on this once, the boys. They were over, because what they went, the bigger ones, they were working over in Jayapadak Maharaj's office. And some were there, some had graduated, were there. And I asked, you know, and something was going on, asking, you know, what they were, you know, eating and all that. So they showed me this ingenious method. They have a plastic bag, a regular plastic bag. You know, the ones that has the two little handles on it? So you fill that up with water. And so when you fill it up with water, you put it properly, it'll stand. Right? I mean, it's wide, but it stands. And those two little ears are there, the handles. Then they take from a broom, you know, the coconut broom, one of those little sticks, and they stick that through the two ears. So it's above the water. Then on that, they hang one of those little miniature, you know, for heating up your cup of tea, water immersion heaters. But you have to be very careful that it's not touching the plastic bag. And then they put the pasta in there and boil the pasta. Right? And when it's done, you turn off the thing, pull out the things like that. Then the fun part is because you just grab the handles and all that, and then you just tip it, and the water goes out, and the pasta stays in the bag. Okay? So, if this is your style of cooking, you know, and then they have a tiffin, because it's smaller, right? You know, kind of a single tiffin. In that, then you put the tomato sauce or ketchup or that, and put the immersion heater to heat it up. And then when the pasta is done, you dump the whatever in the bag, you give it a shake, you know, because you can shake it up nicely. Impressive, no? So, then the point is if one's cooking like that, okay, but then there's such a thing as a kitchen. Right? And people actually use them. Right? They're not just something that you advertise when people buy houses, just like that. But, you know, like in Hong Kong, everybody turns their kitchens into wardrobes because no one cooks in their house. Yeah. So, but that kitchen is used by devotees to cook for Krishna, and it's used by non-devotees to not cook for Krishna. But the techniques are the same. The pans are the same. You use the same things. Like, we wouldn't use a plastic bag to boil pasta. That, you know, everybody else will use a, you know, as a pot. Like that, use the frying pan for that, the grater for that, you know, like this. Does that make sense? So, that's the whole point. In the Vedic culture, all these different activities of karma and jnana are used by everybody. But it's just a matter of what you want from it. Do you want karma from it? You want jnana from it? Or you want bhakti from it? But the instruments are all exactly the same. Does that make sense? And then there's a few that we're not really interested in. You know, we don't necessarily use, like, let's say, a garlic press or something. You know? So these things is that the those activities that are meant for specifically fruitive action, the result, those are the ones we don't bother with. But all the different tools and the different basic actions to prepare yourself that you're qualified for that action and karma, those are all common. Just like the activities that detaches from the material world. They're the exact same that the people on Gyan use. Right? Because Krishna says it's one path. The whole point is let's say you get on wherever you are, and then you follow that path to Krishna. Right? So you don't use the stops where people get off for something other than Krishna. You know what I'm saying? The heavenly planets are in a real place, but in the path going to Krishna, we don't get off the path there. Does that make sense? We just keep going. So that's where the acharyas, they point out what is we use and what we don't. But it's based on principles of understanding. Because everybody's situation is individual. It's unique. So you have to be able to understand the principles so that you can apply it properly. Otherwise, you don't apply it properly, then you get distracted by karma and jnana. Right? So Prabhupada says, there's a razor's edge. One side you have the sahajiyas, one side you have the impersonalists. And you see that they're addressing both things. Right? One is saying, oh, you only need the bhava, or we don't need the knowledge, or, you know, but hey, if you don't do all these activities and you're missing out on something, or if you don't have this knowledge, then how can you have bhakti? You know, so it's all standard things. Someone may propose that since the definition mentions Krishnanushilanam, bhakti also should be defined using the word Krishna bhakti. In response to this, it may be said that the definition uses the word bhakti rather than the word Krishna bhakti, because in the devotional scriptures, the word bhakti alone is commonly used, though it refers to bhakti for Krishna or Vishnu. This is shown in the next statement. Right? So, here we see is that the opposite is going on. They're saying we need a definition here further, and we're saying no, we don't. Yes. Well, the other thing is we need this definition, and the opposition said no, we don't. Yes. So you have to know through the acharyas where you need it, where you don't. Yes. Right? Does that make sense?
So that's the mode of ignorance when we do the opposite?
Yes, when we do the opposite. That and there's generally some motive for it and everything like that, and so these are always problems. Because the thing is, that when we do it the other way, it means it can include things beyond what is actually recommended. And then in this one, then it narrows it that when we say Krishna, it only means Krishna. So any other avatar in that, it doesn't mean that, because we only worship Krishna. Not only Krishna, Krishna only in Vrindavan. Krishna in Vrindavan, only Krishna with the gopis. And Krishna with the gopis, Krishna only with Radharani. And Krishna with Radharani only in the Mahabhava pastimes. Otherwise, we don't even get out of the bed for anything less than Mahabhava pastimes. Like that. So that's why then these things have to be defined. Otherwise, people will take it their own, because it's just Krishna. We shouldn't make such distinction. Right? Because it's, yeah.
So Maharaj, can we say that it is one of the main contributions of the Acharya is to to present the Vedic principle in such a way that we can understand and apply it.
Yes.
And also know the mistakes that we can make.
Yes, mistake means what is should be done, but also because we always remember when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was explaining Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, it also included how you can get distracted, what's not that, what's not Prayojana, what's not Abhideya, what's not Sambandha. Yes, exactly. Very good. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. The active sense of the root shil, pravrityatmaka, is active cultivation involving the body, mind, and words. Nivrityatmaka means that which is different from active. The inactive sense of the root shil takes the form of cultivation which uses emotions of joy and sorrow in the mind. Priti vishadatmaka. It also takes the form of the sthayi bhava on the levels of bhava and prema. But because they're just there. They're not like they're active. They're just, that is the existence that someone is in. Mother Yashoda is in the existence of having the attraction to Krishna, you know, in the parental mood.
Yes.
Then that's manifest as her activities and as the different transcendental symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So the point is it has both. What is indicated by the words seva namaparadhanam udbhavad bhava karita 1281 is a negative form of cultivation, abhava rupa, avoidance of offense to the name and the deity. Right, so we have to cultivate not being offensive.
Yes.
Since we are, you know, naturally offensive.
Yes.
I say we could get what do you call it? Honorary degrees from, you know, that we're just so natural in our, yeah. The definition of anukulya as pleasing for Krishna is both too extensive and too limiting. For instance, the action anushilanam of a demon attacking Krishna is the rasa of fighting, yudhavira rasa, derived from the utsaha rati from Krishna's perspective. It is pleasing for him, since he takes pleasure in fighting with them. Yudhavira rasa is expressed in the following verse. The gentle and chaste Gandhari, who is the daughter of King Subala of Kandahar, or Gandhara, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalaya mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted the good lashing from the enemy. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:13-30. Again, an illustration of the definition of being too limited. If anukulya means pleasing to Krishna's given, then Yashoda left Krishna and went to take the milk off the fire. Krishna was not pleased. Thus, Yashoda would be excluded from the definition of bhakti. The following example is given.
Before, about the demon.
About the demon.
So we say that the demon is included?
No, he's saying that the problem with just using anukulya, right, means...
So it's too broad.
That's why you have to have Krishnanushilana.
Oh, that's... Right.
Yeah, he's defining that. He's showing, because remember, Jiva Goswami says, you know, that it's about being too broad or too narrow. But he didn't give a further explanation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is giving us that explanation. So we understand about how it could be too broad or too narrow.
So he wants to say that our definition is not too broad and too narrow, it's just exact.
It's exact. That's why, in other words, the whole all these commentaries to show that when Rupa Goswami wrote this verse, it exactly defines what is pure bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need one syllable more, and you can't remove one syllable.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the perfect definition. So that's the whole point. He's been empowered by Lord Chaitanya to exactly explain devotional service. So they're just showing that. Because otherwise people will try to... Any time that there's any authoritative element, people always want to contest that. Oh, that's too narrow. Oh, that's too broad. Oh, that doesn't apply. Oh, it's Kali Yuga. Oh, we can't do these things. Oh, it's not practical. Like that. It's always... These are always what we're dealing with. So, yeah. Being very angry and biting his reddish lips, with his teeth. Krishna, with false tears in his eyes, broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. Then he entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.6. In order to prevent the definition from being too extensive, the first case, and too limiting, the second case, the definition of anukulya should be explained as devoid of hostility on the part of the performer. This will exclude the demons because they have hostilities in the form of hatred for Krishna. This definition will not exclude Yashoda because she is devoid of hostility to Krishna. That's why it's favorable. Right? Because their favorableness means that Krishna's from, he sees it in that way. That it's fun to fight. But their mood is not to please Krishna. So they're hostile to Krishna. Therefore, it's not counted as bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that then, otherwise we'll derive our own processes.
Yeah. On the definition of anukulya, Kaurya defined as pleasing attitude towards Krishna.
Pleasing, yes. Yeah, pleasing. So devoid of hostility. So he's pointing out that devoid of hostility. He said. Quote, therefore let bhakti be defined in terms of anukulya, a friendly attitude directed to Krishna. Okay, so this is an objection. The word anushilanam, which is modified by anukulya, is thus unnecessary. Right? Because he's saying, okay, then let it be, it's a friendly attitude. Because bhakti can be defined merely as a favorable attitude to Krishna. End quote. This objection is rejected, since even a pot is devoid of hostility to Krishna and is, therefore, pleasing to him, but cannot be described as having bhakti. Therefore, the word anushilanam is necessary. In other words, there is that endeavor. Because you can just say it's just the mood, right? Because then it doesn't matter what you're doing. Does that make sense? So that's why this is the sahajiyas go off into this, because it's just, if you have the mood, it's perfect. Right? All it is a derivative of you perform the activity, but without the proper attitude to please Krishna, it's a waste of time. So in other words, the religious activities without bhakti is a waste of time, by Prahlad Maharaj. Yeah. So then they'll say, see, we don't need to do these religious activities, it's just the attitude. Mm-hmm. Right? So one has to be very, very careful. It's no, it has to be expressed. Yeah. Because the inactive ones are that meditation absorption in Krishna. But the point is we see that alone only is only there in the Shanta Rasa. And in the other aspects, then they have the higher. But then they're detached from things. They won't say, we're Westerners, we can't do all this Vedic stuff, it's not for us, it doesn't matter because it's all about the Bhav. Yes. Mm-hmm. The Gyanis won't say that. They're too smart for that. Yes.
I understand how this all applies to us as sadhakas. I'm just curious, does it also apply on the higher levels like Pundarik Vidyanidhi was smoking a hookah, so he was doing an activity which is...
No, but why are you projecting it to there? Because shouldn't you try to figure out what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get...
Right, in other words, it's like if you're still trying to get the training wheels to work and not run into the trees or fall into the ditches, then it's not necessarily we should be asking the questions about the particular, those funny, windproof suits that they're wearing. You know what I'm saying? In other words, where it's necessary, where they're common, that'll be defined together, because the one definition does both. It's because it's the same thing. So we don't have to worry about them. They're in another category. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
When you say about Shiva, like active and passive, active and inactive, so then the Sahajiyas, obviously they're not active. So can you say that they're inactive in that sense that you're just working on the principle?
But why would we be comparing the sahajiyas to inactive in Krishna consciousness, that they're fulfilling the definition of shil? Why would we try to project that? Because how is it favorable to Krishna? How is it without motivation? They only say these things so that people don't study and don't figure out that what they're doing is nonsense. Because if you study Shastra, then you know that what they're doing is not right. Does that make sense? Yeah. In order to define the highest bhakti, uttama bhakti, two further descriptive phrases are added. What type of anushilanam is this? Should be devoid of desires for obtaining results other than bhakti. The devotee who remembers and induces others to remember the Lord, who takes away heaps of sin, develops symptoms like hair standing on end by bhakti, which has sprung from bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.31. So bhakti comes from bhakti. Right? Bhakti, which aims at achieving bhakti, is proper. Because you're using the process and that the result will be bhakti. So if you're using the process for something else, then that's not proper. Bhakti for something other than bhakti is not actually the proper usage. And bhakti, which aims at achieving other goals, is improper. In the verse, the phrase anyabhilasha shunyam has not been used. Instead, the phrase anyabhilashita shunyam has been chosen. This means devoid of other desires which are deep-rooted as one's nature. In death-threatening situations, a devotee may say, O Lord, please save me, your devotee, now from this danger. Because it is a sudden temporary desire, it is not harmful to his bhakti. That is because this desire arises beyond his control, opposite of his devotional nature. That desire is not his nature.
Maharaj, what does it mean opposite of his devotional nature?
Because he never asked the Lord for anything. It means if you're performing pure devotional service, you're not asking the Lord for anything. Here he's asking, but that's just it just comes because of that sudden temporary. That just happens. So it's not counted that, oh, he's bad.
Mm-hmm. In the past time of Gajendra, when he offered the prayers because he was going to lose his life, did that not count as bhakti, or is that another exception?
Is he offering prayers to Krishna?
Yes.
Does he have... Now, he has made an effort on his own as the king of the elephants, means the biggest, baddest elephant that there is in that forest, for 1,000 years to free himself from the... Yeah. So, he makes his own endeavor based on his own strength. Then he understands that only the Lord... It's his desire. Only he's there. Only he can take care of these things. Right? So it's that aspect of surrender to the Lord. That's the point that you get from Gajendra. Because here's some very qualified individual. But still they depend on the Lord. See, the demigods, when the demons come, the demigods ride out in their chariots, they go and fight. When they get defeated, then they go to Vishnu. Then they figure out, well, maybe we should surrender to the Lord. Before they think, yes, I can do this. And that was, what's his name, Ritrasura's point with Indra. Is that Indra had given him the thunderbolt, but he's confident of his club, so he first tried to use the club. And then after being insulted by Ritrasura, then he makes the point, you're supposed to be a devotee. Why don't you have faith? Like that. Lord Vishnu gave you that weapon. He said, this weapon will work. You didn't use it. Where's your faith? So you have to know what part of what example you're using. You know what I'm saying? Because you have to be very careful not to take other parts. Because it's not about that.
Didn't we say that Gajan raised some money about
you?
No?
Only Kuja? Might be. But the point is that But the point is Gajendra is glorified, no? Because of the connection to Krishna. So that's the aspect that you're appreciating there, that even that this devotional service is so accessible, so practical, that even an elephant can do. Like, in the Hare Krishna address, even a dog can take part in the process. The Harinam is going by and the dogs come along and they're very happy and all that, they get benefit going along with Harinam party. Does that make sense? No? See, here, let's try just another approach. See, in the Vedic model, the exception does not break the rule, even though that's a 100% guaranteed written in stone law of the Americas. That if you find any little thing that's different, immediately the whole thing is just destroyed and shattered because of your erudite astute intelligence and fine nature. But now if I say, give another example, then we draw a blank. Your eyes are blinking. That's the point. It's an exception. Even if it does have some attitude that or aspect that's weak, it doesn't break the rule.
Another example is kucha.
Okay, and the third one?
There's only three.
And the acharyas have told us about these ones, right? You know, that's the whole point. You understand? So one has to be that one. Someone says something, goes, "Oh yeah, what about this?" But the point is did you try to apply that knowledge that was there into your situation? Or did we just try to find something there? Oh, see, it's wrong. I don't have to follow it. I can still do whatever the heck I want. You understand? In other words, we have to... The acharyas are saying this. It must be correct. We have to follow that. But if it's always going to be find, oh, well, that's wrong, this is wrong, then how is that surrender? How are we making an effort to understand? Right, that. And so, therefore... We won't understand.
If I understand correctly, the idea of surrendering or praying to Krishna when one is in danger is not bhakti, and Gajendra may be an exception, but that doesn't apply to each and every person. Is that correct?
No. What it's saying here is that generally the devotee never asks the Lord for anything, because we're talking about uttama bhakti. Right? So if you're on that platform of Uttama Bhakti, then it'll be understood. If you're not on the platform of Uttama Bhakti, then generally speaking, we're asking Krishna for things. In what areas are we asking? According to the second verse of the Chatur Shloki, we're asking according to our values. Right? We're not going to ask something outside of our values. Right? You know, oh Lord, won't you give me a Mercedes Benz? She didn't say, oh Lord, won't you give me a Fiat 500? Right? Okay? So, it's going to be within the values, right? But that value itself, that it has a potency, that it's attractive, it's Krishna. Krishna's the attractive one. It's just dead matter. So it's already connected to Krishna. But you're conscious of it's connected to Krishna. That's the whole process of karma yoga. So if he's engaged in karma yoga, what's the problem? What canto is Gajendra? Okay. So... then we're going to see is that you connect it by bringing Krishna into it. That makes it perfect. But there's more perfect and most perfect. So if this is on the level of Kubja and that, then it has this pertinent level. But it doesn't mean it's on the level of Braj. But it's connected to Krishna. He's dependent on Krishna. Doesn't necessarily mean it's karma mishra bhakti. Right? It means that you're connecting. See, why would we call it karma mishra bhakti? Right? Because you're using it in a negative connotation here. There's a saying my mother used to say. It's called, it takes one to know one. Okay. So, it may not be the intent, but it's the underlying inherent, you know what I'm saying? Because the whole thing is that if it's authority, if it's tradition, you have to break it down. Because the American way is, whatever way that, the maverick, he's the perfection. Right? Unless he has a weird hairstyle and then people don't like him as a maverick. Does that make sense? So, the whole point getting at here is that we have to be able to see how does this apply in my life that I'm willing to surrender. So we're trying to see is, okay, what am I doing here? That we're smart that we're able to see things, that's very good. But we have to use that to see within our devotional service, are we applying it? And not say, well, he's not applying it, but what does that matter? It means your service will take you back to Godhead, not someone else. So you look at how does it apply to you? Does that make sense? That's what you have to see. Because otherwise, yes, we can find fault. We can sit on the top side and make comments. Ah, well, this, that, and just write everything off. And then what are we left with? What did we gain? You've written everything off. We have nothing. Now what are you going to apply in your service? What is going to be your... Then it's... So that's why this fine points of the Acharyas, they're pointing out how to exactly know what to keep and what not to keep. So you have to try to stay in their flavor. What exactly are they talking about? And take that. Right? So now, when we... Krishna in the Gita, in the third chapter, is he favorable about the concept of karma yoga? Yeah, so karma means engaging your nature in Krishna's service. Right? In the Gita, Krishna says many times, do your duties, with meditating on him, with knowledge of him, to please him. Sometimes he won't use all of those levels, but he'll always say, do your duties in connection with him. That much he'll always say, whether he mentions the knowledge part or the meditation part, like that. But generally say, do your duties with knowledge, because we see the next chapter, fourth chapter, shows the knowledge, then the fifth chapter, how to combine the two. Right? Then you throw in the dhyana, and then you have the complete bhuti yoga. Right? So, we call it karma yoga in a positive way, because you're taking your nature, your activities, your values, your desires, and connecting them to Krishna. So is that a positive thing or not? Okay. But now, we're just connecting those. Now, if we're not necessarily maintaining any attachments, we're just doing that, then it just progresses very nicely. But now, if we see that there's an aspect of that connection where something we're not connecting, that's where we call it karma misra bhakti. We only call it that when there's an obstacle. But if there's not, then why bring it up? Why take it that if it's karma, it's automatically misra? Because then if you take out all activities are mixed, that means no activities. Okay? So then, and then jnana misra, that means all knowledge. So then what are we left with? No activities, no knowledge. So all we're left is with a voidist idea. Because that's what happens. When we become upset with karma, because we get frustrated, we take up jnana. And when we become frustrated with jnana, we kick that out along with the karma and become voidist. And then when that doesn't give any fruit, because there's nothing there to give any fruit with, then we'll come back around to karma. That's why it says that these impersonal paths, they actually cultivate sense gratification. Because you remove God, you remove all authority, you remove actually a reason for engagement of the senses. So it's either you don't engage the senses, because there is no senses and there's nothing. So if you do engage the senses, it'll just be sense gratification, because there's no authority. But bhakti, then God's a person, there's an authority, therefore engagement of the senses is according to his direction. That controls the senses. These others, they're not actually controlling the senses. Temporarily, but we don't, it's not real. You understand? So what we hear these terms, but we have to understand is that these terms are viewed from the primary perspective. The acharyas that are writing here are viewing from the primary perspective. So they're not writing to find a fault in what someone is doing. They're writing to show how to be very clear what's pure devotion and what's not, for the reason that you just do the pure devotion. Not that, oh, I found some not pure devotion, the person's a write-off. So we have to be very, very careful of that, because that's the secondary viewpoint. that bhakti is based on the secondary. When it's not, it's based on the primary. Right? That doesn't mean the secondary is not there and is not a natural symptom for the expression of bhakti or impurities. Because you're going to analyze based on those secondary. But what you're analyzing is how it's not primary. Primary means it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that connection to Krishna, that's the glory. That's what's being brought out. Because every example is never going to be perfect. You use the example simply to create a context in which somebody can appreciate what you're talking about. Because you're talking to an individual, so you must give examples in that they're going to catch. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Is that okay? How Anushilanam is further described?
Yeah.
Okay. How is Anushilanam further described? It is not covered by jnana or karma or other items. Jnana means inquiry about the undifferentiated Brahman, not inquiry about the worship of the Lord. Right? Yeah. Like you said before, when it's just about Brahman and it's ending in Brahman, that we're not worrying about. We're asking about the Lord, and then he has three features, so there may be some understanding there. Not inquire about the worship of the Lord, for knowledge of the Lord is necessary for bhakti. Karma refers to the daily and periodic duties enjoined by the Smriti scriptures, not to the services offered to the Lord for devotional activities, are anushilan. Means their endeavors. The word adi indicates engaging in sacrifices, renunciation, yoga, shankhya, and other such items. Right? So, yeah. These items should not cover anushilana. Right, so in other words, we become involved in these other aspects of religion. As long as they support bhakti, they're useful. But if they cover bhakti, then there's a problem.
Right.
Yes.
That's where we say the karma mission.
That's where we'll say it's when the karma here, these religious elements become more prominent.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Meet
in the consciousness. We're not talking about volume. Just like you say, you have somebody who's very newly come to Krishna consciousness. Now, by volume, they're doing very little connected to Krishna. But because it's so new to them, they're always thinking about it. So you wouldn't say that there's a mix there, even though most of what they're doing is not at all recommended. Right? But where, because those things don't cover the consciousness. But what we're saying is that one gets into these other aspects. What did he give here? Sacrifices, renunciation, yoga, shankhya, and other such items. It means they're recommended Vedic aspects. But we allow them to become more prominent. That's what, you know, like the aspect of the smarta, the ritual is more important than other aspects. Does that make sense? So, whatever that is you take any of these good activities or good qualities, but you let that become more prominent than bhakti, that's where we'll say the mix is. Because the point is you only call it mix because there's something that could be used, but it's not properly used. So then that part that's not proper, that attitude, or if there's some aspect of a ritual or something like that, you know, it's basically it will be there because of an attachment. That's then what we're talking about. Does that make sense? Is that good? Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah? Right. So it's a fine, that's why Prabhupada says it's a razor's edge. Right? If we just do what is, you know, the standard things and just do that and try to do it to please Krishna, you're on the right path. You're on that razor's edge. Right? But then as we start to branch out and become aware of and engaging other aspects of our nature, we have to see that, you know, in other words, the indirect aspects. We have to see that they're in that same line of reference. Does that make sense?
In Maharaj, we need to be clear always about what is primary and secondary.
Yes, what's primary and secondary, because that always what makes it easy. Because
yes.
Even when they're discussing the it, on that transcendental level, it's still discussing primary and secondary.
Yes.
But the point is there, their secondary is always engaged in Krishna's service. So therefore, from our perspective, we don't make the distinction. Like Mother Jashoda, her primary aspect is the rati of parental love for Krishna. The secondary is she cooks for Krishna, bathes Krishna, arranges his clothes and ornaments. And the. But those are all the expressions of that primary, so they're non-different. So we don't. That's why we have to be very careful in using the examples of the eternal associates on our level. But the same principle is there. They're engaging that. Here is the same thing. We have that understanding about Krishna. We engage this particular conditioned nature in Krishna's service. It's the same principle. Here is because of our material attachment we have this nature. But the soul's nature has the eternal. Mother Yashoda, she has that form and that because of that rati. Right? The soul has that mood, therefore it develops that form. Right? That's said in Brahma Samhita. So for us, because of our mood of being separate from Krishna, that develops this form. Right? So the principle is the same. Is that we, in our situation, engage that situation in Krishna's service. Whatever it happens to be. That's why we're not worried what it is. We just engage in it. You don't look at it from the social and all those kind of positions. We just do those duties. And then in the spiritual world, they do the same thing. Mother Jashoda does Mother Jashoda stuff. She doesn't want to go out and romp with the cowherd boys. She doesn't do that. But she does her services. Just like here, we do ours. And if we do that with the form and facilities we have now, then that means we have the attitude to do that in the spiritual world with our spiritual form and those spiritual facilities. Otherwise, if we don't have that, we won't use them for Krishna. Like the yogic Brahmins, they didn't use their facilities for Krishna. Their wives did. Right? And they're in the spiritual world. So that's the point. You can have that mentality. That's how you get here. Right? Fortunately, by the association of their wives, who are pure devotees, then they understood, and so therefore then they wanted to progress, though they couldn't at that point. Does that make sense? These items should not cover anushilanam. The word shunya, devoid, is not used in the second descriptive phase, as it was in the first, namely, anyabhilashita shunyam. The intention of using anavritam instead of shunya is to forbid only those objects of jnana and karma, which conceal bhakti. Right? Because otherwise one might throw out everything. So in other words, what from karma and jnana conceals bhakti, that's rejected. But engaging jnana in Krishna's service and karma in Krishna's service, then that's fine. Because jnana means knowledge and karma means activities. Right? So therefore the jnana and kriya shaktis, they're in support of icha shakti. So Krishna's desire is filled by the icha shakti. Therefore, then the karma and karma, jnana and the kriya shaktis, they make those arrangements and everything that all the activities and that happen to fulfill Krishna's desire. So the problem is not karma and jnana; it's those things covering bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's what happens to us. We use karma and jnana to get what we want, rather than use karma and jnana to fulfill Krishna's desire. Does that make sense?
Even the phrases are so perfectly used.
Sorry?
The phrases?
Yes, the phrases are. That's why they go into such detail. Performing nitya karmas, daily duties with faith, out of fear of sin, if one does not perform them, under the authority of rules, is a covering on bhakti. Right? Because you're saying, if I don't do this, then I'll get sin. No, you perform it to please Krishna. Right? Because Krishna's given these things. Krishna does these things. When he comes here, he performs these activities. So we're doing it to please him. It's the duties given by him. But if we think, oh no, but if I don't do it, then there'll be some sin. The point is, you're doing bhakti. Where's the sin? That's the faith that removes the anartas. As well, performing them with faith that will produce bhakti is a covering on bhakti. Right? That means if you do this, these things, that will create bhakti. Like we were saying before, it means this is one we generally wouldn't take. Doing my nitya karmas, as that is defined in the Vedas and all that, and by doing that I'll get bhakti, that's probably not our problem. But we're thinking, oh, but if all the devotees were nice to each other, then devotion could flourish. That's the one we use. But the point is, bhakti is independent. It doesn't depend upon these things. Because if it did, how did Dasaratnakar become a devotee? How did the hunter, Magrari, become a devotee? How did we become devotees? You know? Does that make sense? That's because bhakti is independent. You do bhakti, the result is bhakti. It's not dependent on karma or jnana. Well, we'll say, no, he can't be devotee, you know, because he's done this. Who said? Yeah, we said. Because we're the authority. Yeah, so that's the problem, is that we have to go by what the acharyas said.
Right. Nitya karma is performed for the pleasure of Krishna. He produces what?
Nitya karma is performed for the pleasure of Krishna.
Will produce what?
Yeah. Means the devotional part that you're doing it for Krishna, that will be for the pleasure of Krishna, and the activity itself will produce the result that nitya karma does. Does that make sense? Let's say you do the anaprasana ceremony for the child to please Krishna, because he's given these things, the acharyas have said, therefore Prabhupada said we should do these, so we do this. Right? So, because we have that devotion will cultivate devotion, will give that. The samskar itself will give good digestion to the kid. You understand? Because the point is, but it's not a problem, because then you can digest prasad and haribo. You appreciate prasad. You know what I'm saying? Both of these things are going on at once. Mm-hmm. So if it's connected to Krishna, you don't have to make a distinction. It's Krishna's world. It's Krishna's place. Krishna is the fire of digestion. So you worship Krishna as the fire of digestion. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a matter of how far you take it. But if we take it, we just say, no, there's karma, it's an activity, it's getting a result, then we're looking at the secondary. Mm-hmm. We have to add that primary. It's about Krishna. It's about pleasing Krishna. Then looking at it from there, then the karmas make sense. Yeah? However, a great devotee is not excluded from pure bhakti by performing shraddhas to the pitas, if it is done without faith in their absolute nature, just to teach the common people. Footnote 41. He is similar to the Parinishita devotee mentioned by Baladev in his commentary on the Gita called Gita Bhushana. Right? He's doing it because if that's the accepted thing in his community that they do it because they know that Krishna is the potency behind that. He is the forefathers. He is the this. He is the ritual. He is the chant. He is all these things. And so they do it just to please Krishna. But the common person thinks that no, the Shraddha itself is the working principle. But he knows that it's Krishna anyway, so it's actually Krishna that even makes it work for the materialist. That the Shraddha right works for the materialist is only because Krishna is the potency. So he's just dealing with that, because he's Parinishta. Yes. Right? But he doesn't think that because I've done the Shraddha, therefore then I'm rightly situated. No, because I'm remembering Krishna, therefore then. So, makes sense. So, that's the point, is because there's these overlaps, that's the one we have to deal. In the beginning, it's just very simple. You do this, it's right, and if you don't do this, it's wrong. But the point is if it's connected to Krishna, to please Krishna, you know, without karma jnana, that's then the actual standard. So we can do that right from the beginning. Prabhupada mentioned is devotees, they were pure devotees. But we know by many cases then there were certain aspects that they weren't very developed in, you know, the religious principles and all these kind of things. They didn't know how to behave, how to do things like that. But that commitment to following Prabhupada's instructions, commitment to Krishna, that was very fixed. Because that was fixed, that's pure devotion. Right?
At least in Maharashtra, in the Shraddha ceremony, they use a lot of tulsi. That's a culture over there.
Yeah.
And in general, the saying is that if you want to give something up, forget this topic, or give this money up, or forget this property, say put tulsi patra over there.
But if they remember that, you put tulsi patra because it's offered to Krishna.
Yes.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Then if it's offered to Krishna,
somebody has to come in and explain that this
and
is...
Then you give it to Krishna.
But culturally, they're following that.
Yeah, there'll be something there, because Tukaram was there and, you know, very prominent. So that aspect of devotion would be there. But just, that's the thing, is we sometimes catch the external and forget what it actually is for, like that. So that's the thing, is if you understand the primary, nothing is archaic. But if you don't understand the primary, nothing's not archaic. You know what I'm saying? That's it. K1112. Yata Sri Narada Pancharatre Sarvapadi Vinirmuktam Tatparatvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Pakir Uchate. Thus, Narada Pancharatra says, bhakti is defined as service to the Lord using the senses. It should be done with the intention of pleasing the Lord, free of other desires, and unobstructed by other processes. Right? Means other processes may be used, but they can't obstruct. So this is what Narada then establishes. So you're engaging the senses. So that's the point. In the service of the Lord of the senses. Right? Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami has also quoted a definition from the Narada Pancharatra as follows. Quote, one should be free from all material designations, and, by Krishna consciousness, must be cleansed of all material contamination. He should be restored to his pure identity, in which he engages in senses in the service of the proprietor of the senses. End quote. So when our senses are engaged for the actual proprietor of the senses, that is called devotional service. In our conditional stage, our senses are engaged in serving these bodily demands. When the same senses are engaged in executing the order of Krishna, our activities are called bhakti. Right, so that's a key point, is that since they're engaged in executing the order of Krishna, our activity is called bhakti. That's the point, is that, so that's why anything that touches Krishna then is of value. And then you have to make sure that we're starting to make it more favorable to Krishna, less distracted, and that we're just trying to approve that. But it's not because something's there, it's rejected. Right? Means in the definition we're trying to be very clear what is pure devotional service. But you see, when the acharyas apply that definition to individuals, then they see whatever platform they're at. Right? That's what we were saying before. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the point, is that the shallow critic, then something is there, if they find a fault, then they say you have to go back to the beginning, start all over again. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur's point is, no, whatever point they're at, aim that point towards Krishna. Move forward. So then you have some depth in your understanding. So that's the point, is even if you say, like before I was saying, with mixed devotional service, but the point is devotional service is there, and they're engaging something, what's causing it to be mixed? Analyze that. Is there an overemphasis of something? Is there something that doesn't need to be there? Or that's fine, but the attitude is wrong. Or it's about Krishna, but then they don't recognize devotees and they deal badly with devotees. It means you analyze what part is there. All you have to do is make that right and everything fine. Nothing's thrown out. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that broad-mindedness is there, that if you understand these definitions nicely, and you understand the nature of the Lord and the soul, then you can preach to anyone, catch them at their position, and then try to bring them to Krishna from their position. Not, oh, you have to give up that, oh, then you can start. You know, it's not like Shankaracharya, first take sannyas, then we'll talk. No, it's that the soul by nature is servant of Krishna. So whatever position they're in, if they take up service to Krishna, at that point, they move forward. That's the point. Bhakti doesn't have any prerequisite other than association of devotees. And so we learn from devotees anyway, so we take it up. So that's the point of why we use the term broad-minded, because they can accommodate everybody.
It also requires expertise.
Requires expertise. Yeah, you could say that, but it's more as it requires faith. Because it's not about the technique or this or that. It's about actual faith that Krishna is the primary aspect. And if you can find that aspect connects to him, then it works. Does that make sense? Yeah? Good? Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prayanandi.